This is Rank and File Radio on CFRC 101.9 FM, broadcasting from Carruthers Hall, Queen's University in Kingston, Ontario. Rank and File Radio is a weekly program covering labor issues from national and international perspectives. We are your hosts, Doug Nesbitt
and Andrew Stevens. Today we speak with Warren Smokey Thomas, president of the Ontario Public Service Employees Union. But first, here's this week's labor news update.
On Thursday, March 29th, the Federal Conservatives delivered their first majority government budget. Budget cuts of 5 to 10% will be felt across most federal ministries. Hit hardest are government agencies responsible for environmental protection, such as fisheries and mining. Mega projects related to the tar sands, such as the highly unpopular Enbridge pipeline, will be subject to fewer environmental oversights and regulation as a consequence of budget cuts and conservative policies. Eligibility for old age security was raised from 65 to 67 for citizens born after 1958. In addition, 19,000 federal public sector jobs are being eliminated through layoffs and attrition. Youth training and employment programs, such as Katamavik, have also been cut. Unlike the 1995 federal Liberal budget, there are no cuts to federal health and education transfers. The federal budget came 2 days after the Ontario Liberal government delivered its own austerity budget. The provincial budget is widely understood as laying the groundwork for a conflict this fall with Ontario's 1 million public sector workers. Premier Dalton McGuinty is asking for a so-called voluntary 3-year wage freeze from doctors, nurses, teachers, and other public service employees. The Ontario Progressive Conservatives vow to vote against the budget, saying it doesn't do enough to cut spending and reduce the province's $15 billion deficit. Ontario's New Democrats will likely support the budget if they can leverage concessions from the minority Liberal government. Without NDP support, the 5-month-old Liberal minority government may fall, triggering another election. Polls show no majority support for either of the three parties.
7,000 people rallied in Alma, Quebec on Saturday, March 31st, in solidarity with the 780 steelworkers of Rio Tinto's Alcan plant who have been locked out for 3 months. The workers continue to gain widespread support, including from unions in Europe and around the world. Hundreds of striking students from the ongoing Quebec student strike also demonstrated in solidarity with the workers. As with EMD London, which shut its doors on workers earlier this year, Rio Tinto Alcan has received a 30-year, no-interest loan from the Quebec government. It has also been revealed that Hydro-Quebec is buying back unused electricity from the idled aluminum plant. According to Daniel Roy, Quebec director of the United Steelworkers, at least $10 million in public money has been spent buying electricity from the corporation, despite a surplus energy situation in Quebec. For more on the lockout and the Global Solidarity Campaign, visit justiceforriotintoworkers.com.
Communication Workers of America activists and T-Mobile USA workers are spotlighting the company's decision to close 7 call centers affecting the jobs of 3,300 workers. From Pennsylvania to Texas to Oregon, workers are meeting with community leaders, local elected officials, and others to fight for their jobs. CWA has been working with T-Mobile USA workers who want a union voice. The German union Verdi, which represents T-Mobile and Deutsche Telekom workers in Germany, has played a major role in this effort, standing up for the rights of workers to choose union representation without the atmosphere of fear and intimidation that T-Mobile USA has created. This week, a full-page ad in the New York Times featured a call by 11 prominent German political leaders and scholars who told Deutsche Telekom and T-Mobile that U.S. employees should, quote, not be influenced, pressured, or intimidated by employers if they exercise their basic right for freedom of association. Across the Atlantic, Verdi members will hold a picket line on Friday, bringing attention to the ongoing violations of workers' rights at T-Mobile USA, as well as their own negotiations with Deutsche Telekom and T-Mobile.
Toronto library workers voted in favor of a new contract, ending a 10-day strike. With wide public support, the union managed to blunt the bulk of concessions, but job security for those with less than 11 years work experience was rolled back.
The City of Ottawa and the Amalgamated Transit Union Local 279, which represents workers at OC Transpo, have reached a tentative agreement on a new contract before the old one expired. Negotiations successfully wrapped up on Friday evening. Ottawa's Mayor Jim Watson will recommend that council support the agreement. This is the first time in 20 years that the city and the transit union reached an agreement without labor action. In 2008, members of Local 279 went on a 53-day transit strike. In 2011, a 1-year collective agreement was signed to give time for both parties to bargain on a longer-term deal.
Nurses at University Hospital in London have voted to unionize, joining the Ontario Nurses Association. About 900 nurses out of 1,250 at the hospital voted Thursday, with close to 70% voting in favor of becoming ONA members. Traditionally, the nurses were paid the same as non-union nurses at other London hospitals, but that changed in 2010 when the McGuinty government froze the wages of non-union hospital workers while sticking with negotiated increases for unionized workers. That sparked an outcry from nurses at University Hospital.
The BC government's era of wage freezes has ended at the bargaining table with the union representing civil servants, but its initial offer to hike wages by 3% over the next 2 years has been rejected. The BC Government and Service Employees Union, representing 25,000 government workers, from liquor store clerks to prison guards and social workers, broke off talks on Friday and plans to conduct a strike vote starting next week. This spring will see about 300,000 public sector workers in contract talks. In contrast to the frequent conflicts with the BC Teachers Federation, the BCGEU has not taken strike action in 24 years.
Meanwhile, the British Columbia Teachers Federation is seeking a contract under the old net zero mandate, from which it hopes to escape. The province rejected the BCTF's January proposal of a 15% wage increase over 3 years. Teachers launched limited job action in September and held a three-day walkout earlier this month. Bill 22, which passed on March 15th, imposed a six-month cooling-off period and makes further strike activity illegal. The bill also legislates a salary and benefit freeze and effectively ends free collective bargaining by imposing a government-appointed mediator who is brought in to follow the net-zero principle. The BCTF launched a campaign against Bill 22 and has argued that it amounts to an attack on the charter right to freedom of association.
That's this week's Labor News Update. Stay tuned for our interview with Smokey Thomas.
Stock markets are in turmoil following yesterday's announcement from Butterflies and Emery Board that the proposed toenail is down by the seashore. Witches and minivans continue to frolic under intense chocolate pudding.
If you don't know how to react to what was just said, then you can begin to understand what it feels like to live with Alzheimer's disease. Tasks like making sense of what you hear can become impossible. Alzheimer's disease takes everything that makes you who you are and can begin in your early 40s. Please donate now to help find a cure at Alzheimer.ca. Alzheimer's, forget everything you knew.
I got so much that I wanna do. I could show you better than I can say.
Radlet Friday nights at midnight. Slow jams with DJ Ellie. Radlets, I can't wait.
On Saturday, April 14th at 1 p.m., CFRC 101.9 FM presents the premiere of two new original radio dramas at the Screening Room, 120 Princess Street. Six local writers created original local audio art, creative documentaries, and radio dramas. And these radio dramas include Jake Costello's Dinner at Six and Lisa Alder's Or Kingston Whenever. The pieces will also be broadcast on CFRC 101.9 FM and online at www.cfrc.ca on Monday, April 16th at 3:30 p.m. For more information, visit www.cfrc.ca. Make sure you tune in and don't miss out on this great opportunity.
Rank and File Radio is joined today by Smokey Thomas, president of the Ontario Public Service Employees Union, which represents over 125,000 public sector workers in the province. Smokey, thanks for joining us.
Oh, thanks for having me.
I imagine you have your hands full these days with a federal and a provincial budget that doesn't really look good for workers in Ontario.
It's been a bit busy.
Yeah. Well, both Ontario provincial government and the federal Conservatives have announced their budgets, and to no one's surprise, both public sector workers at the provincial and federal level are going to see wage freezes and obviously the layoffs. The media, politicians, and business leaders, of course, are characterizing public sector pay and pensions as the so-called golden parachutes and extravagant. How do you respond to these accusations that public sector workers are overpaid?
Well, federally, Mr. Harper has decided that people will have to work to the 67 down the road, that the employees' pension plans, he calls them, you know, gold-plated and all that kind of stuff. But what the public should know is that if you're an MP in Parliament, you can work 7 years and get a pension. So that's a pretty sweet deal, and they didn't touch that. in the province, the provincial government, as well as after defined benefit pension plans, they'd like to reduce them. They want people to get less and pay more for that. But the real pension plan in Ontario that should be looked at is the manager's pension plan. The government just quietly paid $147 million to fix up the deficit in that plan. Any other plan, workers and the employers split that 50-50. So once again, managers get a sweet deal. The real issue around public sector workers is, in my union at least, the average salary of my members is $42,000 a year. About a third don't have a pension. And for the ones that do have a pension, most of the pension plans will pay you $20,000-$25,000 a year. So they're certainly not gold-plated. And they've been paying half into that for all their careers. So the government is the rhetoric. They don't, I find that the politicians don't actually know the facts behind what they're saying. A lot of the commentators and radio really just, whip up. They're almost as bad in Canada now as they are in the States for just telling outright lies and spinning it like the truth. And they just, that's their story and they're sticking to it. So they made, it is an attack on working people. Both levels of government are trying to reduce the size of government and more private involvement. But, if you look at the record of government privatizing things in Ontario, it's horrific. The most recent example being when they privatized Air Ambulance, they said, it's going to be private, not for profit. Nobody should worry. It's not for profit. It's a great deal for the taxpayers. And then the people that run it, somehow they've blown $150 million. There's $25 million missing. They're buying themselves motorcycles and cars and getting, MBAs from foreign universities and each, people sitting on the board were getting $200,000 checks. So if it was not for profit, they sure skinned the taxpayers alive.
Maybe you can give our listeners a snapshot of who the OPSU members are.
Yeah, okay. Well, simply put, if it touches your life or your body, one of my members has a hand in it somewhere. So we're not like nurses, we're not like teacher unions, like we have every walk of life. We do have some members in the 100,000 range. We have scientists who are, sought after worldwide, archaeologists. We have professors and community colleges, and some of them are degree granting. So we have some people that make good money. And Ministry of Labor inspectors probably make $70,000 a year. Nurses make, $60,000 or $70,000 a year. So we have some well-paid occupations. I'd call that pretty well-paid. But the vast majority are in the 30,000 to 40,000 range. They work in associations for community living. They're clerks in the government, largely female-dominated workplaces. Every ethnic group you can think of in Ontario is represented in the public service. So it's a wide range. Firefighters that fight forest fires in the north, the pilots that fly the helicopters, fighting the fires. If you get when you go to get your driver's license as one of our members, when you renew your health card, if you're applying for ODSP as one of our members, if you're and we have workers in hospitals, school boards, every transfer payment agency, children's aid societies, children's mental health, the psych hospitals, provincial jails. So every walk of life, that's our membership.
At the provincial level, despite what I think will be a very severe attempt at cutting back salaries and employment in the public service, organizations like the Canadian Taxpayers Federation and specific to Ontario, opposition leader and progressive conservative Tim Hudak has said that there's no credible plan to reduce the size and cost of government, I think suggesting that there should be deeper cuts. What's your take on this?
Well, Ontario has the lowest cost public service in all of Canada. It's got the lowest corporate tax rate in the Western world, and yet somehow for Catherine Swift from the CFIB and Tim Hudak, that's not good enough. I would submit that they simply don't know what they're talking about. I've been on talk shows with Catherine Swift before, and really when you challenge her, they don't have an answer, so they just attack you. And their thing is it's all about the private sector. And they really don't care if the private sector can do it more cheaply or do it better, which, by the way, is not the case. They can't and never have and probably never will. So I asked Catherine Swift one time, I said, Catherine, explain this to me. You want all the workers to be poor but all the consumers to be rich. Isn't that the same group of people, Catherine? And she just kind of stomped off in a huff. So, and Tim Hood, I've met Tim. They they're like the right wing commentators, right? When you get on these talk shows, once they can't answer a question, I've been on with the guy from C.D. Howe Institute in Langham, O'Leary. They just attack you on your pensions. Well, you know, you got these gold plated pensions, and when you explain it to them, they don't have an answer. And the greatest one of all for any union activist or any citizen, any voter, to any taxpayer to ask is, prove to me that corporate tax cuts create jobs. Prove to me that privatizing public services saves money. And say, show me proof, because guess what? There is no proof because it doesn't. So,
Don Drummond, who is a former chief economist at TD Bank, our listeners know, as we've reported several times, on the commission that he headed and the report that was published, which is now being used really as ammunition by I'd say the Liberals as well as the Conservatives at the provincial level to justify these cuts. What's your take on the Drummond report and this economist's take on how healthcare, for instance, and public services should be transformed and rationalized?
Well, I've been employed in the public service since 1971. That Drummond report was just simply a collection of ideas that have been kicking around in some cases 25 years. There were bad ideas 25 years ago. There's still bad ideas today, and it really is a collection of ideas. When you really study that report, he doesn't connect the dots. He doesn't have a plan. He's just saying, you know what I mean? There's no real follow-through. He did not look at revenue. Don Drummond does not understand how the public service works. I met him. My union met him. Most unions did. We had an hour with him. I annoyed him and took an hour and 20 minutes. And he simply doesn't understand. He had a team of people with him that, some managers from the CAMH in Toronto and different ministries, and they really don't understand the public service. And on health care, he really has got it all wrong. The Ontario Health Coalition's got it all right, but they met with Don, and, Natalie found the same kind of thing, is that he really was just stabbing in the dark. So, and I'd say to the citizens of Ontario, when was the last time a banker ever got to decide, how the public service is delivered? I mean, that is just, that's the biggest insult to Ontarians that I've seen in a long, long time. And I must say, I believe he was probably well-intentioned. Do you know what I mean? I don't think, I met him, he didn't strike me as being a particularly vicious man or anything, but he did the job that he was told to, asked to do, and as misguided as it was. So I don't fault Don Drummond. Like, I don't want to vilify him or anything else, but he's an economist. What would he know about providing nursing care or performing a surgery or working with someone with mental health issues or being in a correctional facility, trying to de-escalate a situation with a violent inmate? He just, or in a lab looking at, oh my goodness, there's a disease, we found the person's cancer, right? Like, he wouldn't know anything about that stuff, right?
McGuinty in Ontario has a very tricky job now. He has to make sure that the budget passes. That's one thing, to make the proposals. And he holds a minority government. Is the NDP going to vote in favor of the budget?
Well, I don't have a crystal ball, but I think here's what I would say to the NDP leader, and I have had conversations with her, just so you know. But what I hope she does is go in and extract as much out of the Liberals as she can for the bottom 5% of a society in Ontario, and extract as much for people who have lost their jobs, more assistance in the job, finding new jobs, adjustment centers, right, and adjustment committees in places where they're downsizing. She's made it clear to me, and she said this publicly, that if there is no movement at all, they are very seriously considering bringing the government down. She has met, I've met with her, Wayne Fraser and I met with her together from the steelworkers. We met with some caucus members and Andrea, and we've pledged to do all we can. My union's nonpartisan, but in this fight, she's the only one fighting the fight for the average citizen. So we would back her that way. I don't know, if I was to make a prediction, I would predict that the Liberals will back up and give them enough to support the budget. But if I think that working people and other groups in Ontario would certainly be able to raise enough money if she had to fight an election. The real issue is they're all in debt from the last election. The Tories are in more debt than anybody. Figure this one out. Dalton McGuinty has a dinner. They raised $2.5 million at this dinner. You have to pay $1,500. Now, what that buys you is you rub elbows with all the Liberal politicians, and that's almost as bad as the lobbying in the States, how they raise money. But the Liberals still have a debt, And I mean, they're going down in the polls. The Tories are tanking in the polls. The NDP are coming up. So I think that at the end of the day, I hope personally that she can avoid an election, but still get something out of them for working people.
What is OPSU planning on doing to oppose the cuts if they are approved in the budget?
Well, we ran a, since Drummond was not looking at the revenue side or looking at quality public services, we partnered with the Canadian Foundation for Quality Public Services, Judy Washelis Lee. She was an NDP MP in, out of Manitoba, and she spent quite a while on the Hill, and she sits on the board of the foundation. So we partnered with them. And we ran in 12 cities, we ran our own commission, hearings and town halls and submissions, some very good submissions out of Queens, the academic community at Queens. That report's now being translated. It will be released, I'm hoping, April 11th, April 12th. And we're going to mail that to everybody that took part, everybody that made a submission, everybody that left us an email address will get that report. It's also going to be delivered to every MPP in the province. And we're distributing 5,000 copies of the report first pass, and so there's 16. I've seen the report personally. There's some very, very good recommendations in there for the government to follow. Whether they do or they don't, I wouldn't hold my breath waiting on them to do anything good. But anyway, so we're fighting from that front. So like that's what I said earlier: truth and truth will prevail, and good ideas and common sense should prevail. It'd be nice to, we can use that now that the Tories have been gone for a long time. But so that's coming out, but we're also fighting back. We did our own analysis of the provincial budget, released it, sent it to all MPPs. We also, on Monday, will have launched for our membership to either call in or email in to the OPSU Orange Line, O-R-N-G-E, and to tell us where they see waste in the government, where they think, there's managerial waste and there's lots of it. And we've already had people, since we were just even talking about this, since the budget came out, I bet you I've had 200 emails from our members saying, you know what, I work in an area where there's 8 workers and 11 managers. How does that happen? So we will just keep fighting them back. The traditional fights, I get the media ask me all the time, do you think there'll be days of actions, riots in the streets? And I kind of look at it this way. I travel all over Ontario, and I can speak on behalf of our members because that's who I meet with mostly, but there's a lot of fear, a lot of anxiety, and a lot of anger, I think, in the world, in the entire world today, not just Ontario, and it's not as bad in Ontario as it is other parts of the world, but it's there. And I truly believe we're almost at the tipping point where that anger will unleash itself. The Occupy movement is a really good example of, exposing, the lies of the 1%. And that movement's still alive and well, just in different forms. But I think generally in the masses, because I know in our membership, morale in workplaces is extremely low, and they really despise the bosses, because in the Ontario government, lots of hospitals and everything else, the CEO of the hospital is still making $750,000 a year, and they take a wage freeze. Well, whoop-de-doo, but they still get their performance bonus of about $50,000 or $60,000 a year, and that's all through the government as well. And they don't report those bonuses on the sunshine list. So I think there's anger, there's hostility. It could spill over. A lot of us labor leaders have been talking. As much as, information pickers and all that, they're really good on particular employees. If you're on strike or, you're in bargaining, that kind of stuff, that stuff's extremely valuable. But I think it's time that I've been trying to change how we do things. The tried and true works, but we're augmenting that with good research, good common sense ideas, calling on the government to do the right thing, and actually offering viable alternatives for the government to consider. So I think that's part of a new strategy of fighting and being the whistleblower for our members. So we're coming at them from every angle. We've got lots of tricks up our sleeve, and I think the government's about to get a very rude awakening. But I do fear that that we'll see massive amounts of unrest, and I don't know what will happen if it'll just start somewhere like it has in other countries, and I think it'll just grow. If I was to make a prediction, I think it might come out of our youth, because the budget just pounds youth. It just takes away their future, And if I was a youth today, I would be really, pissed off on the radio, but I would be very upset. But for young folks, what hope is there for them? You come out of university, $60,000 in debt, you end up still working retail.
In the last 4 months alone, we've seen the layoff of over 2,400 maintenance workers employed by Avian in Montreal, which conducts the maintenance operations for Air Canada. We've seen just recently the Wildcat strike at Pearson International Airport and the closure of Electromotive Diesel in London, Ontario. And now on top of this, we have the announcement of wage freezes, layoffs, changes to pension plans and contributions. What kind of solidarity is taking place between public and private sector unions? And how has this relationship changed since OPSU left the Ontario Federation of Labour in 2011?
Okay, well, first, we're still a member of the Ontario Federation of Labour. We're just not actively taking part. And Irwin Nand actually called me from the OFL. Irwin and I talked quite a bit. And they passed a motion as an issue at my convention coming up April the 18th, 19th. I have a resolution from my executive board that get the OFL to do a restructuring commission. And at the Elementary Teachers Federation introduced that at the OFL board after the last election. So we're all kind of on the same page. That will come back together. But that's a red herring. We're not sitting at the OFL, but there's lots of unions that don't sit at the OFL. And all leaders actually work really well together, whether it be Kenny from Steel, Wayne Fraser, or Kenny from CAW, Wayne from Steelworkers. And I'll give you an example. Through my national union, Wayne Fraser and I from Steel, and our national president, James Clancy, we're setting up, what we're calling for is a modern industrial strategy for Canada and Ontario. Wayne and I wrote a letter. We bought an ad and put it in the Star, the Globe, and the Sun before the budget, calling on the government of Ontario to bring labor, business, government, community, academic, everybody together to come up with a modern industrial strategy. Why don't we make stuff in Ontario anymore? Here's the real partnership. Steel workers support public sector workers. Public sector workers support steel workers. And Wayne and I probably have the closest relationship because we're non-competitive unions. We work well together. But I still have a good relationship with Kenny from CAW. Do you know what I mean? Wayne Hanley from UFCW, and Fred Hammond from QP. You know, Sam Hammond from Metfo. Ken Korn from OSSTF. We all have good relationships, and we all get together infrequently, but frequently enough that we are always in touch on issues. So,
Smokey, thank you very much for joining us.
Oh, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
You were listening to Rank and File Radio's interview with Smokey Thomas, president of OPSU, the Ontario Public Service Employees Union. That's all the time we have this week. Join us next Wednesday, 5:30 to 6 p.m. on CFRC 101.9 FM. Stay tuned.
Show to find myself there. You can run all your life. dig away this ball and chain. Take away this ball and chain.